course, people would say that, right? United States is a corporation, United States is a corporation. And I'm guilty. At first, I believed it, all right? But once I started understanding how the United States actually forms corporations, federal corporations, and that a corporation has to be authorized by the United States to be formed. Well, the United States isn't going to authorize itself. It doesn't have to. It's a sovereign. It doesn't have to authorize itself.
Hi, and welcome. This is Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. And today we have a first-time guest that comes highly recommended by many of the other people in the pro-liberty, pro-freedom movement. They actually encouraged me to reach out to this individual, and he was kind enough to accept our invitation and come on. His name is Robert Michael, and his organization is called houseofmarcus.org. And Marcus is spelled M-A-R-K-U-S, houseofmarcus.org. And as I understand it, his organization specializes in helping people set up and perhaps administer self-governance, private organizations, business trusts, things like that that could be very helpful for people today who simply want to conduct honest business without being constantly surveilled or, you know, terrorized by society. Anyway, we'll find out more. But welcome, Robert Michael. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be on.
Well, no, the pleasure is all mine. Your work comes highly recommended by several sources, and this is the first time we've ever spoken, so pardon my ignorance if I'm not fully familiar with what you do, but why don't you start there and just share with our audience what it is you do?
Absolutely. So my journey is an interesting one for sure. 14 years ago, my parents were facing foreclosure. I was a contractor. I have a GED. I do not have a college degree. I was a contractor at the age of 22, carpenter at the age of 13. And what took place there was my father said, look, if you're going to quit high school because you're not really learning anything, you're going to go learn a trade. So he pulled me out of high school and he brought me immediately into carpentry. So I spent all my years doing that and music. And then my parents were facing foreclosure in the 2008 bubble burst, and they wanted to know what exactly is going on here because they're a good, hardworking family. And how does a good, hardworking American family face foreclosure when they've done everything, quote unquote, the right way, the best way that they could with, you know, honor and dignity and all of that? And it really got me thinking, and they started introducing me to some concepts about law and government that I hadn't looked at. And I didn't want anything to do with it, honestly, Mike. I was like, this isn't my thing. But something inside me said, no, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be an answer to this. Why is this happening? So I immediately found the new love of law and finance and understanding how the entire system of governance and finance works. And I just dove into it head first, and I started testing out different legal theories with different court situations, helping people with debt, helping people with private organizations, trusts, and that was it. It just took off from there, and I wound up falling into it, putting the hammer and tools away eventually because of some experiences that happened to me that changed my life, and I wound up doing this full time. Pulling myself back from anything government and public, if you will, into the private domain and learning how to operate that way and learning how government really works as opposed to what we've been sold or what we've been told.
That's really fascinating. That's a fascinating history. But I guess in this process, you probably stumbled across some of the what we might call, you know, secrets of the elite, I would imagine. Like some of the things that they use, because it seems like, well, they're always immune to lawsuits and they're always, you know, immune to tax audits or whatever else is going on. Whereas the common folk, so to speak, are just constantly harassed and fined and everything else.
But yes,
did you stumble across some things like that?
Oh man, I've uncovered so many things that I've literally had judges get off the bench and hide in the back. Okay. Because
what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unreal. And I've got plenty of witnesses to attest to that. In cases where, you know, look, if anybody has ever done anything wrong, I'm the first one to say, no, you need to pay for that. Like you truly harmed or injured somebody. But when the government is bearing down on somebody and it's all about money and commerce, it really is. And when you start dissecting the court system and you find out that they're doing nothing but creating securities off of criminals and they're trading on those securities for millions of dollars, they don't care what happens to the human life. All they care about is that they're going to create a security and make big time money off of it. They don't care what happens. Once I started unearthing that, I was like, oh my gosh, where do I go from here? And you're right. I had to ask the question, how did these guys protect themselves? And that's when I started understanding trusts and private organizations. And I was like, whoa, this is how these guys are doing a lot of this stuff, through private trusts. Trusts are so important. I know that private member associations are a big thing today, and we'll get into that. But private trusts are probably way bigger than that, and they're not talked about. Trusts like revocable living trust, land trust, different things like that are talked about. But private common law trust, very seldom. Very seldom do you hear about that in the legal industry.
And so many questions already, but you say private common law trust. Now, that probably explains when people go to your website, houseofmarcus.org, and again, that's M-A-R-K-U-S. There's, I'm just looking at it for the first time this evening. You know, it looks like it's looking at some scripture and some biblical type of terms, but this is not about creating a church or anything like that, right?
Well, however, so let me stop you there. That's a great question.
Okay.
Yes, we do have a church. If you go to divinecreation.org, that's our church.
Oh, okay.
And there is a reason we create a church, and it's 100, it's not a 501c3. Anyone creating a 501c3 is really missing a major part of the IRS code, which is 508 C1A. Under 508, 26 USC 508 C1A, a church does not have to apply for 501c3 status and can still enjoy the benefits of a 501c3. But they don't have to apply for it. They don't have to do any paperwork. Under 6033, okay, 26 USC 6033, they also are not required to file information returns. Okay. So again, I can't give tax advice. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just giving information here, education and information as well as entertainment. People should really look at that.
Okay. So wow. I mean, this is bombshell, because most of the churches are filing with the government, and I think they're asking for permission to function as a church, which I always found was kind of insane. I mean, you know, Jesus was here long before the IRS or even the USA.
Right. So when I learned that and I saw people that were using that model, I said, you know what? Okay, let's forget religion for a minute. I do follow the scripture in terms of I treat people the way I want to be treated. I'm honest. I deal with integrity. You know, I don't cheat. I don't lie. I don't steal. You know, so to me, I'm going to have a church and I'm going to preach the truth. And yes, I use Christian principles, but that doesn't mean that I proselytize Christianity. In other words, I don't go around and try to force people into the religion. What we do at the House of Marcus, we try to get people to understand that the Bible has a whole different message than what we've been taught through our dogmatic doctrines, okay? Mm-hmm. So we use it in a much more broad sense, as well as applying to the Christian principles. So I don't want people to think, oh, we come to the House of Marcus Fellowship, it's a private member organization based on our Christian principles, but it doesn't mean you have to be a Christian or, you know, follow the religious dogma to become a member. We use that for a specific reason, which we could have another conversation about. But yes, churches do not have to file under 501, or they don't have to apply under 501c3. They can completely function under 508c1a without any red tape. Zero.
See, that's fascinating. I'll share this. My great grandfather was a pastor, and I guess very successful in his day. And some people tell me that I speak sermons each day for whatever reason. And I toyed with the idea a few years ago of starting a church, and I actually went to an attorney said, hey, what's necessary to start a church? And of course, they had the very conventional view. It was like, well, you got to have a building, and it has to have a steeple, and you have to have meetings, and you have to have either the Bible or whatever is the book of your church, and you have to file and all this. And I was like, whoa, that sounds crazy. I don't want to do all that. I just want to help people heal.
Okay, what he was saying, we use the Bible because we definitely have to have a recognized form of religion, right? Mm-hmm. But the government cannot, and they've tried to define what a church or religion is, but they can't. So the IRS came up with a 14 point, you can research this, it's right on their website. There's a 12 to 14 point test that they test your church with. Okay.
And I
pulled a document off of the IRS website that goes through this. And at the end of the summary, so I'm not sure if you're familiar with legal writing, but in legal writing, there's a thing called the IRAC method, which is issue, rule, application, conclusion. So all legal writing follows that method, right? They first state the issue, then they'll give you the rules of, you know, this issue and what the, you know, the laws and stuff are, and then they'll give you the application, how does that apply, and then the conclusion. Well, in the conclusion of this document that I got off the IRS website, it basically says, yeah, there's these 14 points, but really what we're looking for is, do you regularly congregate? Do people come to a place? It doesn't matter if it's online. It could be online. It could be physical. But do people make an effort to come and congregate and hear you speak the word? That's all they can really judge it by. So I'll tell everybody else another little tidbit. You can go to universallifechurch.org at ulc.org, and they have been into the federal court and they've been challenged with this. So they also have a page where they tell you about the 508c1a, and they say, yes, there's these 14 points, and yes, we try to follow them as much as possible. But that's not what dictates a church. That's just the IRS's way of trying to put you in a box, because they technically don't have any authority to put you in that box. Okay. So yeah, it's really interesting. So what we do at the House of Marcus is we have a church, we have an unincorporated association, which some people might call a PMA, and we use private trusts. We use these three mechanisms because they're completely private. And if we're going to do business from one private person to another, that's how we do it. And
okay,
Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution says the state cannot impair the obligation of a contract. They cannot get in between this contract as long as we're not doing anything illegal, quote unquote, which is very broad in its terms. So there's a lot to it.
yeah, exactly. And this is fascinating. But let me bring it back to a practical question that our listeners might have. So a lot of people listening here, I mean, my audience is extremely well-informed, very high IQ, liberty-minded. Many of them own businesses, small businesses, or maybe they do their own like self-employed type of business, or they have a small retail business or a big successful, whatever. How could this, like, what benefits could accrue to them if they were to pursue some of these structures that you're talking about? What would motivate someone to look into this more?
Well, for me, that question is always, how much do I like to be controlled, right? How free am I? Because if I'm registering businesses such as LLCs and corporations and stuff, what I'm doing is saying, yes, I agree to be under this law structure. So anything I do in that business, the state or the Fed has a right to come in and tell me what they want done, because that law structure is sanctioned by them. It's authorized by them. A private organization is not. And I've already defended these quite a few times. They don't have any business in my private business, right? So the question of how can this benefit me is really, how much do you want to be free? Now, I notice that in this freedom community, a lot of people that are cushy, so to speak, they're a little scared to step out there, right? Unfortunately, what's going to happen with that is it's going to be too late when they come and say, we're going to tell you what to do and how to do it and when to do it, and you don't have any right of recourse. And people go, well, how could they do that? I'm going to pay an attorney. Okay, well, you agreed to have a contract with the state by setting up a structure under their authority.
Right, right. You filed with the Secretary of State.
And you also agreed with the IRS that you're doing a certain business that fits that criteria as well.
Yes.
However, it doesn't mean that you can't have an LLC or a corporation or anything like that. Yes, you can. But who owns it? Who has the ownership? Because everything comes down to title, interest, ownership, right? A lot of these elites out there, the way that they structure is, what did Rockefeller say? Own nothing but control everything. And how they do that is through trusts that are shareholders of corporations who own the corporations. So they can't come after Rockefeller. They can only go after the trust, and they can't dive into the trust too deep because that's a private contract. So they can't get in between that. But yet the trust owns the shares of the corporation. You see where I'm going? So there's a lot of protection there, a lot of protection. And that's how these guys are doing it. They layer these organizations until it bleeds back so far into a private organization that can't be touched. And it can't be, you know, their books and records can't be subpoenaed and things like that because they're private.
Well, that's okay. That's fascinating. And I guess probably some of the people listening who, I mean, we have attorneys and we have tax accountants listening as well. And they would probably raise the question, I'm guessing, does what you're talking about, well, who knows? But they're pretty open-minded folks too. But does it survive the court scrutiny? I mean, that's the test, right? Is where the rubber meets the road.
Yes. Only, in my opinion, only if you're willing to question even the court's authority in this. And that's where a lot of attorneys will not go.
True.
And I don't mean this, I don't mean to be, you know, I don't have anything against attorneys, but I've dealt with plenty of them throughout my time. And what I realize is it's very scary to them because they could lose their quote unquote license. Okay. Because if they get sanctioned or whatever, hey, you know, we're going to sanction you. Well, you just took that person's livelihood. So how would, you know, how much are you willing to step out there if that's at stake? You see? So
right.
It is very hard. It's very hard.
Well, so how does this work in a practical matter? So I don't know, somebody sues the private membership organization or attempts to, and the
good question.
Yes, yeah. Go ahead.
Private membership organizations are not, especially unincorporated. In a legal sense, an unincorporated organization cannot be sued as a legal person. Okay. Because it's unincorporated. So what happens is the court will go after one of the members that's performing the particular act, so to speak, that's being sued upon. So I read a case, let's take an example. I read a case of a fraternity, okay, where these fraternity kids were out there getting drunk and everything, and they were driving and they had a car full of beer and they hit somebody, okay? Now, they hit somebody and it had something to do with the fraternity. I can't remember the exact details, but the basis of it was that they couldn't, the court could not, or the plaintiff could not sue the fraternity because it was unincorporated. They could only sue the individual member, okay, for the damages and the injuries. So that's really a lot of what comes into play here is, yes, they're going to come after an quote unquote individual. But I've studied, again, a lot of law, and these courts are not functioning the way that people and attorneys are taught that they're functioning. And this is where I get a lot of pushback from attorneys because I don't have a law degree. They don't want to hear it because it kind of unearths their whole, you know, their whole entire life and their career. But these courts are not functioning the way that you and I were taught. They're functioning 100% according to contract and commerce. Okay. So that's a big deal when you're talking about being an American and you think you're in there as an American and you're not. You're in there as a legal entity.
Right.
You're not a man. You're a legal entity. That's a problem. big time. Okay, because
right, because it's like pre-admitting that you are owned by the structure.
Yes. And we're actually in the middle of pulling that whole thing apart and going right to the state and saying, hey, you need to answer this. You know, I mean, you guys at birth, you've done it. And look, I have, and I know, again, this is very hard for a lot of people to swallow. It was for me too. That's why I went on a 14-year journey of trying to figure this out. And we have had people come to us, including a guy that was running for governor in California, who questioned the health department and said, what do you do when a baby is registered? And they said, we bond it. They put wow. you in bond from birth. Okay.
Right.
Then you run around as a debtor. And you, even though you have money, you can have money. You don't have to have debts to be a debtor. Here's the thing, Mike, and you may know this. Very simple to see. We don't have money in this country. We have debt, right?
That's right.
They hand you Federal Reserve notes. They a note. Just yes. read the financial definition. It's a debt. And
yeah,
we don't
own it was
that
created
note.
From debt. It's debt the moment it's created.
Exactly. We don't own that debt, and it's not our obligation. However, how does that – so, okay, it's very well known. If you go on the Treasury website, they say, you know, Federal Reserve notes are obligations of the United States. Well, how did that obligation get passed on to me?
Yeah, good point, because we didn't realize that we ever agreed to take on
right.
that debt. But you're saying it happened.
And where did we agree? So here's right. what I've discovered, and this is going to go way down the rabbit hole. And again, it might rub some people wrong, and I'm sorry if it does. It's not my intention. My intention is just merely to bring these things forward that I've experienced, that I've put my life on the line to make sure that they're real, because I don't take things at face value either. I want to question. I want to find out, is this real? And yes, you're being handed – so when they give you a certificate of birth, you're being handed an actual instrument, something of value for the benefits that you're going to take from the government, which means you're taking the money of the Federal Reserve, which is loaned to the government. So the debt then passes to you because you don't have any money throughout your lifetime. You don't have any gold or silver. Or, I mean, you could buy it eventually. But the point being is, their currency is debt. So they pass that debt on to you by giving you an instrument for value at birth. Uh-huh. And that's where House of Marcus unveils a lot of this, but we keep it behind the private wall because we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be attacked, and we don't want to come off like we're not here to take down the government. We're not here to fight them. That's not our thing. We're just here to make sure the debt is settled, period.
That's fascinating. Now, so many questions again. But this is really fascinating. I feel like we could dig for hours into a lot of this.
Yes.
Is there a court case that's documented that you could name or share with us that people could read up of how this goes, or like a really, you know, a really good decision in any court
no.
case? Nothing like that.
No, because think about it. If this was made a precedent, the Federal Reserve would have been out of business years ago. Because the American people would literally revolt overnight if they found out this. It is a very well-kept secret. And since I'd say about 1933, when they instituted the Emergency Banking Relief Act, it's pretty much you keep quiet about it. Now, when we've gone into courtrooms and not given our name, which is not our name, by the way, that's the state's name. They took it. Okay. And you know, we just name the situation. Okay. The court gets very upset and the judge starts threatening. We're going to hold you in contempt. We're going to arrest you. But if you stay firm, I'm sorry, I can't give you that name. In all due respect and honor, it would be a dishonor for me to give you that name. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that name, and none exists. The charges go away.
So these cases end up being just dismissed, dropped?
Dismissed. Yes. So you're not going to find a precedent. The only thing, if you're lucky, you'll find a dismissal if they even put the details of why it was dismissed in there. Usually they'll put some sort of excuse in there so it doesn't look like that was the case. And I wish it wasn't that wishy-washy, but it is. It really
so for,
is.
So for all the lawsuits really that happen, let's say private lawsuits between individuals – or I should say civil lawsuits. It's really that whether they realize it or not, both parties are agreeing to consent to a process that is optional.
Right. Now that's different. So when two parties, yes, it is optional. When two parties sue each other, okay, that's different. But if you look at most stuff today, well, including, you know, quote unquote crime, it's the state. The state is suing the person, right? So, but that doesn't mean you and I, of course you and I could consent and go into a court and have a battle of something. That's fine. But when you're talking about the state suing people for traffic tickets, I mean, there's a ton of stuff, family court, everything. You're talking about the state taking control of entities and telling them what they're going to do because basically you gave up all your rights and everything to your estate at birth.
Wow.
If that makes sense.
Did you follow at all the Alex Jones trials in Connecticut?
I didn't. I don't get too much into that kind of stuff anymore. I used to 14 years ago, but once I realized this is way, way deeper than any of that stuff, it makes that stuff look like child's play. It makes that stuff look merely like, oh, that's just a distraction.
Well,
because when you
let me share one detail with you about that that really stands out as, I think, relevant to what you're talking about. So Alex Jones was sued by the parents of children who were killed in the Sandy Hook shooting, and they were in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And the claim by those parents was that because Alex Jones questioned the shooting initially, although he quickly apologized for it, that there were third-party people that Alex did not know who left nasty notes on the doorknobs and peed on the graves of the children and did horrible things and caused damage to the parents' emotional distress, even though Alex never ordered them to do this and Alex did not even know those people. And then here's the relevant part. The judge in Connecticut, who I think is this globalist deep state, you know, tyrant, she declared that he was guilty by default without a jury trial. That she said he's guilty because they didn't like that he didn't provide all the documents that they demanded, even though he didn't have them all. He provided like 10 million documents, but it wasn't 10 million and one. So the trial was a farce.
Sure.
But somehow, you know, he got dragged all the way through that farce, you see.
Sure. Because again, well, so there's a lot to that. Number one, I have a friend in Connecticut that has deeply researched that and will tell you it definitely is a farce. Because he's in Connecticut and he searched high and low and he's like, dude, I'm telling you, I cannot find, the only thing I can find is showing that people were paid off and things happened that shouldn't have happened, but it wasn't what they made it out to be. So there is a big cover up with that, number one. Number two, I believe that the Alex Joneses of the world are put in there for distraction, right? To make you think that, oh, well, look, this is a conspiracy theory. And now look, it's not a theory. See, the court ruled it's not a theory. Keep your mind off of that, right? Because the court already ruled. But like you said, how can the court rule when there was no jury trial?
Right.
Okay. So
which is constitutionally guaranteed under the 14th Amendment, by the way.
That's right. So if you go in there as a legal person and not one of the people, well, even one of the people's a scam to me. But if you're not an American, you're a U.S. citizen going in there. Well, sorry, U.S. citizenship is secondary and you don't have a right to the Constitution or any protections of it because you're not an American. You claim to be a U.S. citizen. You have a legal person. And that, I'm telling you, it sounds crazy, but that's exactly what's going on.
Wait a minute. I'm not following what the distinction here. You're saying
I'm going to break it down real
please.
Quick. Much as I can, because this will blow people's minds. Okay. Prior to the Civil War, the term U.S. citizen was used broadly to mean people from the states. Okay. Citizen of the United States, which I believe was a capital C citizen of the United States. Okay. And that just meant, you know, people from the Republic states. Now, after the Civil War, they created the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment created a new citizenship, a federal citizenship, not state, federal because the slaves did not have a right of suffrage. So they could not vote even though they were free. So they were stateless. So the federal government said, no, we won't allow them to be stateless. We'll create a citizenship for them called a United States citizen. So if you read the 14th Amendment, it says anyone born or naturalized and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which is a secondary requirement, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. That's two citizenships.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 says, the federal government shall have exclusive legislative authority over the 10-mile square only. So, other than commerce, right? Interstate commerce and some, you know, military stuff and things like that. So, how do they rope everybody in? Just sign here and volunteer to be a U.S. citizen. Because the 13th Amendment that came out prior to the 14th said involuntary servitude is illegal. But voluntary servitude, well, totally legal as long as you volunteer. Sign here. Are you a U.S. citizen? Sign here. So we keep unwittingly doing that, but we're not. I was born in New Jersey. I'm a New Jerseyan. If I'm living in Arizona, I'm an Arizonan. I'm not a U.S. citizen. That U.S. citizens only live in Washington, D.C. And okay. I've got a very good mentor of mine who took his case all the way to the Supreme Court. And he's amazing. He doesn't get involved in any of this anymore, but he acted as private attorney general on many cases. And he wrote a manual about the federal zone, about this very topic, which the Supreme Court looked at and said, okay, I mean, we can't argue with this, because he was explaining all of this. The territorial jurisdiction, we've all been hoodwinked, all of us. And we go around saying we're U.S. citizens. We're not U.S. citizens. We're Americans. We're American citizens. We come from the state. We don't come from the United States. The United States exists in the 10-mile square, the territories, and any possessions that the United States has bought. Now, I mean, let me give you a piece of law where you can see a clue to this, and it's the only piece of law you're going to find in the entire United States Code. 28 U.S.C. Section 1746, paragraph 1. Let me explain what that is, because it backs up. It gives you a clue, I should say, to what I'm saying. Section 28, 1746 is unsworn declarations, okay? What that means is I can write a declaration without a notary, and I can swear to it as long as I swear one of two ways. The first way is I swear or affirm under the laws of the United, under penalty of perjury, under the laws of the United States of America, that the foregoing is true and correct without the United States. Now, why would that law say under the United States of America without the United States if they were the same place?
Yeah, I don't know. Good question.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I'm right or wrong. I'm just saying, look at that statute. It'll tell you right there. Now, the second one has you affirm under penalty of perjury, doesn't say anything about the United States of America or the United States. And that's the oath that all the police officers use, everybody uses in the legal system. They don't use Section 1, because if they use Section 1, they're back under Article 4, Section 4, Guaranteed Republic State, and not a democratic United States. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing this, so it's a lot to unpack.
It is, man. It's a ton.
It is intriguing and deserves a lot more detail. Well, let me ask you this. Then on a practical matter, can people then extricate themselves from these commitments that they unwittingly got entangled in?
Okay. Yes, they should be able to. And we have been working on that. And a lot of people have extricated themselves in very individual circumstances. But when we try to bring this into a court, it is such a highly regarded secret that, yes, we do pay the price sometimes for trying to stand for freedom. I'll just leave it at that. It's not easy. Have we done things? I can show you things that we've done that is very amazing. But I don't want to get too much into that into the public because I've been targeted before and it's just not something I care to do. That's why we have the private membership actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let me ask you this though. I've heard of people in the freedom movement declaring themselves to be, I think the term is American nationals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, is that similar to what you're describing or is it parallel?
Yeah.
What is that?
That uses all the same theory. Okay. The one thing we have to be careful of, and so yes, the answer is that is along the lines. Absolutely. The thing we have to be careful of is they want to pin us as sovereign, quote unquote, citizens. Now,
right. I wanted to ask you about that term. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good, and here's why, because what happened in 2010. So remember, I started this in about 2008 and around 2010, 2011, they made a spectacle out of a guy. Jerry Kane was his name. They shot him down in a Walmart parking lot and his 16-year-old son. They riddled him with bullets. They put it all over the news and showed you these guys being shot to death. Because they were quote unquote sovereign citizens. And they term that at that point to mean a cop killing, tax evading, protesting, you know, anti-government, this, that, and the other. That's what they mean by sovereign citizen. Mm-hmm. Now, what I've learned in my years is I don't fight the system. I don't have to fight them. It's not about fighting them. It's about the claim. Whose claim is superior? I'm not here to take the government down. I could care less what they do. Just stay out of my yard. You stay in your yard, I stay in mine. If I have a claim to my yard, you can't come in my yard and tell me what to do. My claim is superior. And in that, I've been, I feel, more insulated and protected from being called a sovereign citizen, although they've tried plenty of times. Uh-huh. And I say, no, I'm not a sovereign citizen. I'm an American. And I believe in the principles of American freedom.
Right.
Doesn't right. everybody?
Well, I also right? interviewed in the past Christopher James in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're probably familiar with his work and so on.
I've seen him a few times, but not deeply familiar. I know he did a lot of common law stuff, if I'm correct.
I think so. But what I remember him saying is that there were some really simple questions if you ever have to appear in court. And I guess one of the questions was, is there any contract between myself, but he uses particular phrasing, the person or something, maybe it's not person, but
no, what, that is.
Okay. The person, is there any contract between myself and this government, you know, pertaining to this issue? And the answer is no, there's no pre-existing contract. And then the next question was, well, there's nothing to enforce here. I forgot exactly how it goes, but he was talking about this and it was intriguing, but I didn't follow it all.
Yeah, it's along those lines. But here's the thing, though, Mike. There's a thing called law and action, okay? You can go into court and do all this glorious stuff. Law and action says, I'm in charge here, and I'm going to tell you what to do right now, and I don't care about the law. And that's what we have. That's the problem we have. And it's bad. Just like you saw in Alex's case, right? How can you have a court hearing and judge this man guilty without a jury?
Well, right. And the judge even ordered him that when he was testifying in his defense during the penalty phase, because they had a jury for the penalty phase, that he was not allowed to state that he was innocent or he would have been fined and perhaps jailed.
Yep.
I mean, it's incredible. How can a court tell you that you're not allowed to state that you're innocent?
And I'll tell you, so have you ever done, are you familiar with Dun & Bradstreet?
Well, yeah. I mean, as a business ratings firm.
Okay. Have you ever looked up a state on Dun & Bradstreet?
No, I guess I haven't.
Look up states, courts, everything. They're all doing business as, okay. Really? Every state is doing business as the state of Kansas in business since its constitution was written. Okay. Huh. Doing business. Annual sales. They have a whole thing, annual sales, right? What is going on here is all the state of, think about the language. A lot of people don't think enough about language. The legal system is based on legal language.
True.
That's why there's a dictionary for it. Just like the financial system is based on financial language, right? You got to have a dictionary for it because it's a whole different language. But think about the state of. Well, what about the state of? Of means it came from something. So the state came from Alabama. Well, how did that happen? Right? And this is where, so when these states redid their constitutions, they all became corporate. And they redid their constitutions after the Civil War, and they all became corporate. Okay. That's a big problem because they're also using commercial paper to fund their organization. And whose commercial paper is it? It's not theirs. They're using the Federal Reserve's commercial paper. So instead of courts, we have nothing more than banking intermediaries that are corporate entities that are there to make a profit. And we do know because we've had people issue, so GSA bonds, okay, Government Services Administration, okay, they've issued GSA bonds to courts and had cases completely wiped out, criminal cases, okay, performance bond, bid bond, what's the other one? Performance, bid, and surety, okay. And these three bonds were issued to courts in the past. Now, I personally haven't done it, but I know some very well-respected people that I respect that have done it, and they wipe the cases out, okay? Because all of this, it's not about court. It's not about justice. It's about the bonds. It's about the insurance. It's about the commerce, the money. In order for the government to control things, it has to be commercial. It has to be. Can't be anything else. Well, so when this guy in Canada, I forget his name, you mentioned him earlier, is talking about where's the contract, what he's saying is this a contract or is it a tort? I mean, is there a tortious violation here that I have some duty? Okay, fine. Provide the duty. Provide the contract. Where does this become my duty? Where does this become my contract
right,
obligation?
Right, that's exactly what he was asking, yeah.
Yep. And if you can't prove that, then you have no claim. If you have no claim, you're done, and now I can counterclaim you for injuries.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy, man.
it is. What about the – I hope you don't mind me asking kind of off-the-wall questions.
No,
but
I don't.
I hear people also sometimes talking about how the United States of America is a corporation and that it's a Delaware – not Delaware, but I guess the Washington, D.C. is this corporation, but it's not the original United States or something like that.
Okay, I'm going to blow that theory apart and destroy it and also give you my opinion on it.
Okay, yeah, please do. Okay. It's fascinating.
So, yes, for years people would say that, right? The United States is a corporation, the United States is a corporation. And I'm guilty. At first I believed it, all right? But once I started understanding how the United States actually forms corporations, federal corporations, and that a corporation has to be authorized by the United States to be formed. Well, the United States isn't going to authorize itself. It doesn't have to. It's a sovereign. It doesn't have to authorize itself. So here's what I'm going to say, because I know a lot of people that believe that, that may be watching your stuff are going to go, this guy's a plant. I've been accused of that several times. But let me tell you how to debunk the act that it's an actual corporation. And then I'll tell you that, yes, the same theory is true at the same time. Okay. In the United States statutes at large is where you will find all the acts of Congress that make the United that make up United States corporations. Okay. I would challenge anyone right now to scour all the 200 and some years of statutes at large and find me the act of Congress that authorized Congress to become a corporation in the corporation for profit sense. Okay. Now it can be considered a corporation because of the way it functions, but it's not a corporation like you and I think of as Apple, right? Or Nike. It's not that type of corporation. People will say, oh, it's filed here and it's filed there. Well, I've looked at every filing. You can pull any filing out you want, and I can debunk it in 5 seconds that that is not the United States filing as a corporation. And here's why. If the United States were to file as a corporation in Delaware, the United States being a federal enclave and a federal sovereign from the states, and the states are separate sovereigns, they would have to file as a foreign corporation. None of those filings that people throw at me are foreign corporate filings. They're all domestic. That can't be. You can't have a federal corporation file in a state as domestic. It's not domestic. It's from DC. So it can't be, right? So that's one way you debunk it. However, here's what I've come to realize. Yes, they do function. And let me back up a minute. People will say, well, the Organic Act of 1871 turned the United States into a corporation. That is not true. If you read the Organic Act of 1871, what it did was it allowed Congress to control the city of Washington, D.C. with over and above the governor and the government that Washington, D.C., the city itself had. That's all it did. It didn't incorporate it. However, they did use that authority to expand out into the states. Now, here's why I agree that the United States functions like a corporation. A company, if you read the legal definition of a company, it says that a company can be a corporation, but is not necessarily a corporation, okay? It says that corporations, LLCs, partnerships, things like that are companies, but not the other way around. So if you go back in time, you start looking at the Virginia Company, right? The Massachusetts Bay Company, all these different companies. A company functions like a corporation, but the difference is it doesn't have to go through a federal or a state process to be incorporated. In other words, it's private. So I believe that, yes, the United States functions as a company, as a private company that was brought over from the colonies who were companies, okay, and then morphed into, over time, the United States, which is a larger company. Does that make sense?
Wow. I mean, sort of. I mean, it's so mind-blowing, and this is on me, not you, but I feel like having had this discussion with you, I now feel less certain about my understanding of our country than I did before we started. I'm like, now I have a zillion new questions.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I'd love to. I mean, look, I can go on and on. And I don't know why God blessed me with this knowledge. That's why I do everything through the Spirit, because I'm just a carpenter. Why did this even happen to me? But yet I was able to retain all this information. And I don't know if you see the books behind me, but that's my law encyclopedias. Like, I'm not pulling this out of the air. Like, that's my law encyclopedias. That's in every law library. I mean, it's American jurisprudence. There's another one called Corpus Juris Secundum. There's two of them. I happen to have an old copy here. That's not the only thing I research with, obviously. But what I'm getting at is I go through and pick this stuff apart, and I've tried, where's the smoking gun? I want the smoking gun. I don't want to just talk this stuff. And over the years, for some reason, I've just been able to retain the very pertinent points while seeing the big picture of, wow, man, there is a huge intelligence that set this up way beyond our belief. We think in terms of right here and now, but these people think in 70, 100, 200 year plans.
Right.
And then they implement them. And it's like, oh my gosh. That's why I started to realize, like, I don't follow this conspiracy theory stuff anymore, because it's all part of this one big, huge plan. And when we can really see that, that's when we can start to see the path to freedom, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it took me 14 years, and now I'm trying to help people, you know, take the fast track, because I'm like, look.
Yeah. And I would just remind people listening, there is a reason why, you know, Hillary Clinton traveled the world getting $250,000 for a 30-minute speech, and it went to the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
There's a very particular reason why that cash flow is happening in that way. And you can bet it's something that most people don't know about. Now, okay, I've got one last question for you, Robert, but I just want to give out your website one more time. So again, it's houseofmarcus.org, M-A-R-K-U-S. And, you know, I will encourage our viewers and listeners to just, you know, check it out, do the research, watch the videos there. Obviously, this takes some digging and some knowledge to understand this. But I want to ask you this, Robert. An accountant that we used to have in our company, I became convinced that this accountant was actually just working for the IRS.
Yeah.
Right. And then I actually mentioned it to this person one day. I said, you know, look, everything you're doing is pretty much just in favor of the IRS, like to maximize how much money we pay to the IRS. And the accountant said, well, of course, that's the way we're all trained. We all do that. And I was like, whoa, this is the first time I'm hearing about this, but I thought you worked for me because I pay you, but then you're collecting for the IRS. That's common, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, the IRS is a trust, okay, and it's based in Puerto Rico. I think it's trust number 42. And if you do the research, you'll find that the IRS morphed out of the alcohol prohibition, okay? And they couldn't – the IRS could not operate in the way that they are in this country. So they had the base out of Puerto Rico. Because if they were doing what they're doing, that would be racketeering. So they moved to – yeah, seriously, this is all researched. So they moved to Puerto Rico. Think about it. The RICO Act. They're right. Telling you right in your face, right? So I can't tell you, Mike, how many IRS things we've shut down very simply. I mean, shut them right down. Like people that are scared of the IRS, I kind of chuckle anymore because I'm like, wow, that's like the boogeyman in your closet that you've never seen. You'll never see, but you're scared to death of it. You're scared. And as soon as the wind blows, you think it's the boogeyman.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I also talked to a guy who used to work at the IRS, and he was telling me, I said, you know, why is it that people can't get any replies from the IRS? And he said, look, let me tell you a secret. The IRS, he was talking about this particular city. I think it was Provo or something. The IRS mm-hmm. has like 12 floors of this building. He said, there's an entire floor dedicated to nothing but piles of unopened mail. That it's literally packed with unopened mail, and they're like 2 or 3 years behind, which is crazy if you are owed a refund or something, right?
Oh,
but
totally.
That means you overpaid in the first place anyway, but think about that.
Absolutely. And the tax system really is based on voluntary compliance.
It really is. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it is. I have federal documents showing that. That it's based on – and you can go right into I think it's 26 CFR 601.602, I believe. It says the tax system is based on voluntary compliance, and we issue forms to help the taxpayer comply. Code of Federal Regulations. I mean, it says that. So – and then I've also have a committee where they – some of the committees where they were questioning the IRS, and they came out and said, well, yeah, it's based on voluntary compliance. So why are we volunteering? And where is that money actually going? Because it's not going to pay off. From my understanding, and I could be wrong, but from my understanding, that money goes to pay the interest on those little green notes that they keep printing. Okay. And then anything left over goes to fund all the black ops stuff that they're doing to kill us, essentially.
Well, yeah. I mean, we know that they don't need our money to run the government's expenses because they can just print it at will, which they do all the time anyway, like during COVID. It's like, oh, we need another $1 trillion in stimulus money. Boom. Magically, it's out of thin air. Like, well, why do you need to tax us?
Right.
They don't.
And that's how they're going to collapse the whole thing, too, is printing tons and tons of money and, you know, flooding the market. So they are going to collapse it, I believe, any day now.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Actually, I just covered this yesterday. Mohammed bin Salman, you know, Saudi Arabia, just announced that China is the priority trade partner, and that they're walking away from the 1945 petrodollar agreement that keeps the dollar as the world reserve currency. So, man, it's just a matter of time now. The world turns against the petrodollar, then they eventually can't sell debt.
They can't. So in my understanding of research, I'll give you this, and if we have enough time, I want to give this because this will blow people's minds if you do the math, okay? Back at the Revolutionary War, they did the Declaration of Independence, which to me is also shrouded in a bunch of propaganda, but we can get into that later. But then they had the War of Independence, okay, where we had to pay France to fight England. And when you read the Paris Peace Treaty of 1783, it literally shows you that England owned France, right? So who was really fighting who here, okay? So we paid France to come over and fight England because we were just a bunch of ragtag Americans that didn't have any money. Now we're in debt. All right. So they form the Articles of Confederation. They form a government. That's the Republic. That's the United States of America. Okay. Now, a few years now, they were given a loan and they said, okay, you've got so many years to pay this loan off. If you don't pay this loan off, you're in default. And I think it was 7 years or something. So by 1787, we were in default. All right. So now they're like, okay, well, we got to write a charter. Well, what does Chapter 11 do? It's the same thing. Okay. It's the same exact thing. They went into default and they said, well, according, if you're going to function that way, you're going to need a constitution. You're going to need to function in insolvency. Now let's do the math here. Every 70 years in the, I believe it's in the Torah, okay, 70 years of peace. Then you have a war, right? Debt forgiveness, all of this. 70 years from 1789 was what? 1859. Civil War,
right.
Now, how many years later, 70 years later from the Civil War, 1929, stock market crash.
Right.
70 years later, 1999, which was when they reorganized all the insolvency again. And then 9/11, we went into a war on terror. They hit the towers. Constantly reorganizing the insolvency every 70 years. You know, and
which
people
is,
don't.
Yeah, like Jubilee in the Bible. Yeah. And then also the fourth turning talks about this too, these cycles that keep coming around, generational yeah. cycles. And you're right, there's so many things. And by the way, I apologize for keeping you so late here. It's just been a fascinating discussion.
I'll go all night. Thank you, though.
I mean, we're coming up on an hour. I will wrap it up here, but truly this is fascinating. But yeah, it I've talked about this too, where the system was insolvent again in 2019, and it seems yes. like they needed to create COVID in order mm-hmm. to have another reason to do another round of stimulus to try to keep the system propped up a little bit longer. And now they need another emergency, which seems to be maybe, you know, World War III or something with Russia, or who knows what they're going to do. But we're on the edge of a systemic collapse every day. I mean, look what's happening yeah. in London with the pensions just collapsing. They've lost like over $1 trillion British pounds of value just this year. That's over $1 trillion. The system is on the verge of collapse, so they need another emergency to keep stimulating it.
Absolutely.
But eventually they're going to run out of adrenaline injections or heroin or whatever they're on.
Yeah, it's going to happen here very soon. And, you know, another interesting thing about emergencies. So people wonder how they just disregard the Constitution. And if you read, there's a Senate report from 1973 that talks about the continued emergency from 1933, which is the Emergency Banking Relief Act. Okay, there are some emergencies that have not yet been canceled. They're still
sure.
in play.
Right.
So the way that they get rid of the Constitution is when there's an emergency, hey, we're under emergency, those provisions get suspended. And I'll give you an example of that was right in my face in a Kansas court case that I was in. You know, they were supposed to bring the case to trial within 180 days, according to their statute, which is speedy trial. Okay. And when I questioned the court, I said, well, how come this, you know, this is almost a year later. They said, oh, we don't have to pay attention to that. We're in COVID, right? The Constitution doesn't matter. You don't have a right to speedy trial.
Right.
Really? You just threw the Constitution right out the window because we're in a COVID emergency. So it confirmed that when there's an emergency, they can just throw that right aside.
Well, and then fake President Joe Biden just signed right. another extension of the COVID emergency a few weeks after he said COVID was over. Right?
Oh, that guy.
So he's, I mean, on one hand, he's saying, you know, it's over. There's no emergency. But they have to keep the emergency technically in play because yeah. it gives them the rights, as you just said, to bypass the rule of law.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's amazing.
It's crazy, man. It's so deep. And I hope people really do start to see and begin to fix this thing. I mean, look, we, you know, these old systems of government are very, very old. I mean, let's face it, they're thousands of years old. And I think we're coming to a time in human evolution where we're saying this doesn't work anymore. We need a much more holistic way of governing society. You know, so at the House of Marcus Fellowship, we're creating our own little society. It's private. No one can tell us what to do with it. As long as we're being in honor, we're not out there harming or injuring anybody else. We're not crossing anybody's line, going into their yard. This is our society, and this is how we function. And we're going to start functioning this way in between each other. That's why we have a membership, because it's not so much becoming a member to gain, you know, any sort of individual, like, oh, I'm going to get out of the system in the matrix. No, it's about becoming a community where we're all moving out of it at some point. And how right. do we do that? I haven't met too many thinkers that are like, look, okay, yeah, we have some ideas, but let's put them together and actually organize. You have to be organized. And I think that's where I was always frustrated with groups that I would come across. I'm like, yeah, they got good ideas, but where's the organization? How does it run? How's it set up? And so that's what we're doing there. We're just creating our own society, and we're not hurting anybody doing it. Well, we're doing it under the, you know, Christian principle, so to speak.
Exactly. And let me just throw a couple more comments, and then we'll wrap this up. But thank you for your time. Two other things that I think are relevant to this. I saw that some group in the UK just announced the dissolving of the UK Parliament. So they put that on the record that they, the citizens, are dissolving Parliament. Of course, Parliament itself is not going to, you know, recognize that, but at least there's a citizens' effort of some kind. The other thing is I interviewed Paul Preston, who's part of the New California movement, right? So they have, in fact, declared their own government representatives. I think they're holding elections. They've issued their own new constitution, and they're setting up a parallel government in New California to then essentially, I don't know what the right term is, but to transition power to themselves away from the corrupt Newsom government. So, you know, whether or not that's going to succeed, it's fascinating to me that so many of these efforts are underway where citizens are saying, hey, it's we the people, you know? So it's we the people. Let's form honest systems that are not rooted in corruption or pedophilia or, you know, treason or whatever is happening out there. And I think you're coming from a place, a similar place of just let's have honest people engaging in honest contracts and business, and we want to be left alone by, you know, the tyrants of the world. That's pretty much, you know, the bottom line, absolutely. I think.
Yep, absolutely. That is the bottom line. And how we achieve that, you know, it may come in many different forms as we all get our sea legs and start to stand, but eventually it's going to take hold. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, Mike, is let's think about it real quick. I mean, we have different people that I don't know. You just rattled off a few. I don't know these people, but yet we're all going for that same thing. So that to me says that's divinity working. We're all getting the same message at the same time.
True. It is happening because the people of the world, I've talked about this, there are going to be so many, you know, uprisings and revolutions, and we don't hope for any violence, by the way, folks. We just, you know, we want peace and we want rule of law and we want rationality in society. But because of the crimes of the governments against their own people, and I'm talking about in the UK, you know, in Germany, in France, in Canada, for example, there are so many examples of people that are going to rise up and replace those systems. Especially as the food crisis accelerates, the energy crisis accelerates, inflation, currency collapse, all of it, we're going to see so many of these ideas sprouting around the world. It's going to be really fascinating to see what comes out of it.
It really is. I'm actually excited. I mean, you know, there's that whole excitement and, you know, I don't want to say fear. I got over fear a long time ago. I just give everything to God. I go, well, if this is meant to be, I mean, you know, we're all going to expire someday. So I'm just, whatever you need me to do, God, I'm just here to do it. But I'm excited at the same time, right? I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Like, what's going to happen? Nobody knows. So that's why it's important we all stay together. We bind together. We teach each other. We, you know, these holistic ways of living and teaching and learning are so important. And a lot of it has to come from the spirit because we have to lose the idea that our job made us who we are, that our status makes us who we are, that our things that we own make us who we are, because it doesn't. It can't. You're a spirit and you're in this physical body. And those things are nice, fine, but it's not who you are.
No, everybody knows it's actually how many likes on Facebook that define who you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Or whether you have a blue check mark on Twitter, which is apparently being debated now. But no, yeah, hilarious times. But Robert, this has been really fascinating. I thank you for taking the time, especially this extended time. And it's been really fascinating. Your website, one more time, is houseofmarcus.org. That's M-A-R-K-U-S for Marcus, houseofmarcus.org. And I just want to thank you, Robert, and invite you back. Maybe we can go deeper the next time, but I'm going to check out your website and learn more.
Absolutely. And, you know, if I could just throw a quick note in about the website, you know.
Sure, go ahead.
I've been blessed to have people come to help. And you know, we have a member on our team that has built that website from code. So there's nothing on WordPress, nothing on Wix. It's all proprietary. Everything is ours. There's no oversight. It can't be easily shut down, infiltrated, all of that. So again, I think that's just a testament to like what I feel people really need to look at. Like, take it back. Stop registering your stuff. It's yours. You don't have to do that. You know.
So anyway. I love the fact that your Divine Creation website refers to natural law, and mm-hmm. that's something that's really resonated with me over the years. Natural law, because these many of these rights and contractual rights and the right to ownership of your own body and your own ideas and so on, these are natural extensions of the fact that we have consciousness, which is a gift from God.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I don't mean to harp on the Bible. And again, I don't come from it from a religious standpoint. But in my opinion, the Bible is the first contract that supersedes all of these government contracts. It's like when you read documents from a king, you know, or a queen, by the grace of God, they always say, right? Well, who graced you over me?
Yeah.
How did you get any more grace than I did?
And right? Why is the queen on all these silver coins, too? That's my
right. Bible, that's the first contract. God can grace me too. I just never stepped up and made that claim. Their families did and passed it down, and then they killed anybody that they fought to stand on that position, right?
Good
well,
point.
I can do the same thing. I'm just not going to go around fighting and killing people for it.
Yeah, well said. I like that. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Robert. This has been really fascinating and also educational, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great night. And for those of you watching, feel free to repost this interview if you'd like on your own channel or other platforms as well. We're always about, you know, openness and free speech and sharing ideas that really help people. So if you can benefit from this, or if you know somebody who does, give them the address of this interview. Of course, I'm the founder of Brighteon.com, but we also post on BitChute and Rumble and other platforms as well. So you can find this interview wherever you're looking for it. Thank you all for joining me. God bless you all. And God bless America, too. Take care.
Absolutely.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.